Vodka O'Clock.
Good evening, everyone. It's Amber Love from AmberUnmasked.com, and joining me today is Andres Salazar, who has created a fabulous new Western horror comic called Pariah, Missouri. So, Andres, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Amber.
All right. So, I came across your Kickstarter via a mutual friend of ours, Joey Groa, who also has a great Kickstarter out for Dry Seasons.
Yep.
So, I was really excited and happy when you sent me this link because it is a Western and, you know, a little bit of horror, not blood, gory, gushy slasher. So, so it seems like exactly my perfect kind of book.
Cool. I'm glad you dig it. Yeah, it's, I'll give you the quick pitch. It's,
yeah.
Basically, I really like my favorite show of all time is probably Deadwood. I don't know if you've seen, have you seen Deadwood?
No, I haven't.
Oh, gosh. Okay, what I love about Deadwood and David Milch's writing is the dialogue and the characters and how they're all connected. So I take a lot of I get some inspiration from Deadwood, and I mix in kind of a supernatural elements like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now, it's not campy like Buffy, but it's not, you know, this isn't hostile or anything. You know, people aren't getting their arms chopped off and fed to demons, but I do try to add the kind of the magic and folklore and religions of the times, because that's what I'm kind of into. So it's that kind of horror, occult, horror type of Western. And I love Civil War and the Western period, so I thought I would throw that in there. So,
yeah, I mean, I definitely dig magical and paranormal elements. I was a big Buffy fan too.
Yeah.
And but there were sometimes, you know, things would turn me off. Like, I never got into Charmed. I really couldn't stand it. Yeah, but, you know.
I love that you say that because we're watching Charmed last night because my wife likes it.
Oh, that's fabulous.
It's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
But, you know, but to me, like, Buffy just did it so much better. Plus, it was really funny. And that's, I was afraid to watch Buffy. This is my Buffy story. I was afraid to watch it. I came in year three because I had a coworker who told me that, you know, that it was her favorite show and that she loved it and it was so funny. I'm like, funny? That looks like it would scare the shit out of me. And she's like, no, really, sit down and watch it. And yet, incidentally, there were shows like Supernatural. I can't watch Supernatural like alone in the dark. No, can't.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a complete wuss.
See, I just watched Buffy like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a grown-ass man. I'm not going to watch a show called Buffy.
Right.
Okay, so when this show came out when I was like a teenager and so forth, there was no way in hell I'm going to watch a show called Buffy, especially some campy show about vampires and love and all that stuff. I just thought there's no way I'm doing this. Meanwhile, everybody on Earth is telling me I should watch Buffy, and I resist for, I don't know, 10 years or what have you. I finally say, okay, I'm going to just watch this freaking show, and I'll be honest with you. Episode, I don't know, 5 or 6 or whatever, I'm totally in love.
Yeah.
I totally am hooked. When freaking, when Angel dies or whatever, and the love, I'm like so I could not believe the cliffhanger.
Yeah. Yeah, and people, these are not spoilers. This show is 20 years old. So
and then Spike, and then Angel, and then her love for him, and then the other Slayer comes. I mean, seriously, I'm totally a fan, and I tell people that, and they don't get it. Like, I totally understand this is so girly and whatever, but you know what? It was brilliant. It is a really good show, and unfortunately, it's either labeled or somehow there's a conception of the show which is incorrect of what it is. Because it's much
more... Well, the movie was so bad.
Well, I think that was probably it, but it's much more than just teenage angst mixed in with cheesy vampire makeup. You know what I mean?
But that's become what the genre is. If you have a vampire in something, it is automatically considered some sort of young adult genre piece and marketed to teenage girls. I don't know why, because to me, vampires were like you're saying, horror classic characters. They were monsters and demons, and you told them to scare the crap out of people. So that's what those stories were, and all of a sudden they became all romanticized and, like you said, girly. Like, they're marketing these things to women. I mean, there's 40-year-old women. It's not even, like, teenage girls. But there's 40-year-old women in the freaking lines for Twilight. It was
I mean, that's what's great about going to Comic-Con or any of these big conventions is you'll see the Whedon fans are in full effect, man. And we're talking generations here. This isn't like the emo kids waiting in Twilight. You're talking, 40-plus all the way down to little kids are digging, Mr. Horrible blog and all that stuff. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know what he does, but he taps into this area that is... It's fun, it's lighthearted, it's got some comedy, but it's also got a soul, and it's got heart, and it's real, and you care about these stupid characters. Like, you care about Xander, and you care about these people, and that's the magic of good writing, right, is to really care about them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and, yeah. And the fact that we were talking about Westerns, and Pariah, Missouri is a Western, so... They did occasionally show the flashbacks through Buffy and Angel of Angel and Spike and Drusilla's origins, and showed them at different periods in time. And yet, we never got a Wild West Buffy episode.
I know.
Wouldn't
that have been
awesome? That have been?
Oh, could you imagine?
I would love,
steampunk
Buffy episode with,
right.
Oh my God, with magical, awesome shooting things.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been fun. Yeah, it's a good show. It's a good show.
It is. So, your artist, I don't want to leave out Jose Pescador. He looks like he's got some brilliant, absolute brilliant work done already. So how did you come across Jose?
Yeah, Jose, basically it was one of those things where I went to Comic-Con a couple years ago, and I'm an artist. So I actually, I write and I draw. And I had finished about 8 pages of Pariah, and I was starting to show that around to people, and I realized how long it takes to draw is just, I just felt that, one, it would take me so much more to do it myself, just effort-wise and time, and I wanted to really dedicate myself to getting the book finished,
Right.
And I like collaborating with people, and I wanted to have another brain in there, and another point of view or another perspective that can add to the mix. So at Comic-Con, I met a number of artists there, and I met a Mexican artist who's a friend with Jose. So he, when I told him how much I could pay and how much we were going to go for, he couldn't do it, but he recommended Jose, and so it was a friend through a friend. And he's great, and he's wonderful. He's actually a painter. He does a lot of galleries, a lot of fine artwork. He's done some graphic novel, sequential stuff, but he's mostly kind of a fine artist. And the way we do it is I send him, full scripts, of course, with all the page layout and that stuff. And I'll usually draw some of it. I'll give him some thumbnails or kind of just some sketches of the characters and designs, reference stuff. And then he comes back and gives me pencils. And those are pretty finished. I mean, they're pretty tight. And then I use those pencils. I do some cleanup in Photoshop. I print them out on hard paper. And then I ink and watercolor it. So I do all the kind of... I touch it up, make it the way I want it. And I really don't have to do much changing from his perspective, the things he does. And then really adding the colors and the inks and stuff is what I like to do. And so we really work as a good team. And that helps me, too, because I was able to get Jose at a good page rate. I mean, let's just talk nuts and bolts, right?
Sure.
So, I was able to get him at a good page rate because he's just penciling. And then but that penciling frees me up to do other stuff, like write. So, and then I just do the finished coloring, and it allows me also to kind of put my final stamp of approval, right? Because if I know that I'm doing the last work that's done on the page, I'm happy with, because I did it at the end.
So you're doing the lettering also?
I do the lettering in Illustrator, and I hate it. I hate lettering.
Okay.
It's just It just takes me a long time, and it's because I'm just not that proficient and that quick with it. So, you know, and I'm learning just actually this week, Amber. There's a real like skill and art to lettering.
Of course, there is. I don't know how to do it. I wish I did.
Yeah, you don't just put some bubbles in there and slap it together. I mean, you really have to think about, and I'm just learning this, so I'm just really learning how to think about where the eye is moving, how to kind of guide the reader through the page with the bubbles, you know, how you put those balloons, how do you emphasize things, all that kind of stuff.
And it really gets messed up if you, for example, if you drew the characters in a certain position in the panel without realizing that they speak in the opposite sequence or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In fact, there's been some times when I thought, oh man, I wish the panel was different now. Meaning, I wrote it this way in the script and it looks like this, but now when I'm seeing it live and I'm trying to fit in a 25-word balloon, that 25-word balloon does not fit on that little 2x2-inch square, and what do I do? How do I break it up? Or do I change the script? Which luckily, I'm the writer. I can just change the words if I need to. You know, all those kind of things. It becomes very organic. Like, I look at the pages that are done now, and the script is different than when I first wrote it. You know, just through the evolution of the art and everything, it kind of like morphs into something slightly different, which hopefully is for the better. You know, I think it is turning out better.
Well, I think it's great if you can have an organic process like that. So that, you know, because you have a working relationship, and the fact that, like you said, you have taken so much control of the project that you're not just, you know, like I'm just a script monkey because I don't know how to do any of the artistic stuff. So, you know, I give up a lot of that control, and, you know, for you, like you're saying, it's much more organic because you can change it, you know, at the last moment if you need to.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for that. That's a good thing. I mean, I would love to find a letterer and just have them do it, but I would always want to be able to make modifications and do that if I could. You know, we think about people like Alan Moore, who's kind of infamous about his very dense writing and dense scripts. You know, I wonder what kind of, I would assume, from what I understand, you know, there wouldn't be that kind of organic process. It seems like what's sent is in stone, and the artist just kind of goes with that. You know, I don't know. I think it'd be very different, I would assume.
When you were deciding on the colors, you're doing like more of a wash over it, correct?
Uh-huh.
So
you're
not doing a traditional, you know, coloring within the lines sort of approach.
Yeah, I love watercolors. I've been doing watercolors for years, and it's just kind of what I like to do. I'll go outside and do landscapes and things like that. I love the way watercolor looks. I work in oil and acrylic and those other things, but over all those other mediums, I just love the permanency of watercolor. Where when you put it down, that's the way it's going to look. You know, in oil, you could spend a couple months going over it and just, you know, keep refining and reworking it constantly. Watercolors, you really can't rework it. Once it's on there and dried, you're done. And so I think there's a lot of fun, exciting, serendipitous moments of brilliance that come out with watercolor, meaning like certain things will just flow just right and it looks really cool, and there's no way I can like go back and recreate the way that water kind of tumbled over the page and things like that. So I like that kind of organic and old feel to the page. I'm looking at one of my pages now. Originally, Amber, I was thinking of doing it all in ink wash. So I use a lot of some inks, and I like to do ink washes. I was going to do a black and white ink wash, and then I thought, you know what, why don't we make it sepia toned? and kind of instead of do, you know, ink, we'll use kind of a brown and umber and those kind of tones, just the Winsor & Newton watercolor. And I started doing that, and I really liked it. And then I started playing with using contrasting blue, because blue and orange, of course, are complementary. So I'm using kind of blue and orange complementary design for the pages. And I'm liking it. And you know what? Everyone's had really good feedback, and it seems to be unique enough and eye-catching. And so I'm stoked about it.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely gorgeous. And I, you know, the sepia tones with the shadows, I think it's an appropriate color palette.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a Western, and it should look aged and like it's on parchment.
Yeah, that's kind of what exactly. You know exactly what I'm going for. Yeah. It's fun.
So, I know that you have two videos on the Kickstarter page because you have this really cool trailer, which I have to ask you about. And then you have the second video to tell people who you are.
Uh-huh.
So, but the first thing I want to know is, like, why did you opt for Kickstarter?
Okay. Basically, Amber, I heard about Kickstarter about, I don't know, a couple years ago. I had a friend who was doing a film through Kickstarter, and I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. I like the idea of people just, like, donating money to do a project. That's cool. And then I really didn't think too much of it. And then about a year ago or so, I saw some comic book people do that. And I thought, you know, this might be a good way for me to get the money I need to print the book. I mean, you know, this is a side gig for me. I would love to do it full time, but you know, it's a definite financial contribution and commitment to doing something like this. So I thought, let's just do a Kickstarter. Now, I know there's some other crowdfunding sites like Indiegogo and things like that, but to be honest, I decided to use Kickstarter because of the brand that it already has in the public consciousness. People know about it. I figured that would be the easiest, you know, barrier of entry is to do something that people have heard of, at least. And there have been some successful comic projects in the past. I wanted to do it before it gets too crazy, and I predict, you know, in 5-10 years, maybe we'll have to go to something else because it won't be good anymore. I don't know. It might be like an eBay. I have no idea.
Exactly. You don't. I mean, you know, like, everybody, Facebook has evolved into what it is today, and they, you know, kind of hates it now. So.
Exactly. So I wanted to use Kickstarter before everyone hates it.
Right.
So I want to do that, but I haven't really done much research on other places to do it. I mean, other ways to crowdfund.
But you definitely wanted to keep it creator-owned. You didn't, you know, did the thought come to you that you wanted to, like you said, take those first 8 pages that you did on your own and pitch them to Dark Horse or IDW and that way?
I will be very frank with you in the audience.
Sure.
If Dark Horse comes up to me and says, hey, we like your book, we want to publish it, depending on what the contract says, I would probably be down with that. And the reason why is there is a lot of behind the scenes non-creative work that goes into this, and it is work, and I'm not that, you know, jazzed about all that kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean? I would love to be the guy who writes his stories, does his work, and gets a check in the mail. I'm that kind of a guy. Now, I wanna have a emotional stake in this, and clearly, like, Pariah is my baby now. I'm not gonna just sell it off to somebody. But if there would be a way to still keep my ability to be creative and give away some of those administrative tasks like publishing, I would be down with that. Definitely. You know, because in the day, I want to be telling stories. So I want to tell my stories. Do you know what I mean?
Right. I that's how I feel, too. I really don't like doing the business end of things.
Yeah.
I don't, and sometimes it just kind of, like you're saying, it falls on you. If you want to see it come to life, you have to do it yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I'm totally cool with guys like, you know, Dave Sims and people who just will do self-published, I think that's awesome. If you've got the stomach for it and you've got the drive, I think freaking all power to you. And maybe that's what I'll have to do. Maybe that's what I will do. I don't know. But, I mean, I've talked to other creators, you know, Joe Casey in particular loves Image. You know, he's like, he was telling me a couple months ago, he's like, dude, get into Image, do Image, because they're the best gig in town. And, you know, if Image or somebody like that were to pick it, I would be stoked. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would love to see it there. And, you know, and speaking of Kickstarter, you reached your initial goal. Which
just today. You saw
2000.
It.
2,000. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks very much. We're stoked.
You know, and it was a really modest goal. You set $2,000, and then you have these amazing stretch goals for if you hit 3,000 and 4,000 and 6,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, why did you go basically quite low on it?
I deliberately went low because I have no idea if this was going to work. You know, I did not want to put all this effort. We're going to talk about the videos and stuff in a bit, but there's so much front-loaded work you have to do before you push the go button on Kickstarter. I did not want to invest all that time and effort into doing something and then go through the emotional roller coaster that is these days of the campaign and then it not get funded. You know, or at the very end try to finagle a way to kick in my own money to get it over the top. You know, I did not want to have to do that.
Right, and you didn't want to have to call mom and dad and say...
put in another $500 so I make it, right? So I could have put a goal of 6,000, or I could have put a big goal, right? But I just didn't know if it was going to work, and I didn't... I have not received that much of the public's, you know, feedback. And so I didn't know if I got something that's going to work or not, and I didn't want to risk it. So I figured, what is the minimum amount that I need to pay Jose and print 100 copies. And that's basically $2,000. And so I'm not getting no money. Don't get it twisted. I have I'm broke. I'm not getting any money. People think like, well, it's $10 for this. Well, it costs that much to send out everything and the shipping and the, you know what I mean? I'm not making money off it. So I figured, why don't I do the lowest amount and just get this mofo going? And if I got 70 more people who will read it, then I'm happy. And if we go over, then it's playtime. And so now let's have fun. Let's now, like, make cool things for people and, you know, let this go. But even if we reach, you know, even if we go crazy and go $10,000, that's still all going to be going to printing the trade paperback in March, or rather in May. So, I mean, it's not like... you know, no one's going to be getting rich off this.
Well, I want to see the 10,000 get reached because your stretch goal reward is the is to bring the comic to life in a dramatized radio play, and I think that's awesome. I mean,
I am so stoked, Amber. Okay, check this out. I thought of this idea like it was only like a week ago. It was during the campaign. I was what was I doing? I don't know what I was doing, but I was like, you know what? Because I do drama, I'm a stand-up comedian at night, and I do some of that, and I know a lot of theater people and actors down here in L.A., and so I'm into that whole thing. I'm into that whole world. And so I thought, wouldn't it be cool, because I've always wanted to do, like, radio dramas, and I've done a little bit of acting. I thought, wouldn't it be cool to then just make a radio play out of this freaking script? That would be awesome. And so I why don't we do that? And I started kind of figuring out, well, how much would it cost to get a couple people? And I thought, you know what? It wouldn't take that long. I mean, it would take maybe a day or two to do the recording and then all the mixing and the Foley and everything. And I thought, what would be a good goal to hit? And I thought, let's just shoot for the stars at $10,000. Let's do it. And so I'm really – dude, that is the most requested one, too. Everyone has emailed me and said they want to see – or rather, they want to hear the radio drama, and I so want to do it big time.
Well, have you seen that there was a Kickstarter for the Thrilling Adventure Hour, which it's this show out there in L.A., so I didn't know if you had heard of it or not, but the Thrilling people show up to this cool theater, and they watch an old-time radio show. So
Furry Hunt Companion or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so the cast that comes in, I don't know how much they basically commit for. Like, they have regular cast members, like Busy Phillips, and then some people come in and guest star. And, there's no budget. There's, like, zero budget. So, you know, if they have costume pieces at home in their own wardrobe, that's what they wear.
Yeah.
And, because it's supposed to be radio anyway. Uh-huh. So they record this, and they are, I believe, doing a graphic novel. They're doing the reverse of what you're saying.
Huh.
They do this podcast of the Thrilling Adventure Hour. And, in fact, you will hear my keys. You will hear me typing.
I'll have to look this up.
Let's see, Thrilling Adventure Hour, the graphic novel, and beyond. And it was successfully funded, like, three times fold.
Oh, wow.
So...
That would be awesome. I have to check that out. I'll definitely
check it out. Yeah, absolutely check it out, because they did the reverse. They started out as a radio show, wanted to do a graphic novel, and because they got so much extra funding, they are also going to do a concert film.
Ooh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
So it will be...
And that's cheap, too. I mean, to produce that, you know, you put a couple cameras and you record, you know, a weekend of shows, and then you edit it. That's not bad.
Yeah, so that's definitely something up your alley.
That's cool. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of... What I found interesting, Amber, was the crossover of comics and, you know, stand-up comedy, for instance. You wouldn't believe how many stand-up comedians who are into comics, you know, or like we're talking acting and theater and things like that. I mean, there's a huge crossover of those people who love those types of things, and so that's kind of a cool idea to kind of bridge some of those medias together. And that's what I would love to do with Pariah. I mean, you know, this is a comic book, yes, but for me, it's a whole, like, world, and I don't want to get all cheesy how everyone talks about their world-building adventures, but, you know, but you know, that's what it is, right? It's like, it's intellectual property that hopefully could go to different mediums and different avenues to reach out to people and tell compelling stories.
Yeah, so, and you don't know.
You don't know, right?
Pariah, Missouri might someday be on Xbox.
Yeah.
That, nice, right? You know, you don't know. It could be there, and you could be a first-person shooter, and...
Yeah. That would be interesting. I know it, because I know the story, that would be very funny. Yeah.
So let's talk...
Unfortunately, Pariah is more like Downton Abbey than it is.
Than it is. It's more like a soap opera.
Yeah.
Oh, darling!
Yeah. It's much more about the Granthams than it is about Dead Eye Willie or whatever, you know?
So the trailer, though, we didn't get to talk about the characters yet. So.
Oh, and you know what? Really quickly, you did mention there's two videos. There's actually more videos as a backer. And so some of my updates are for backers only, and some of them are for everybody. But I've added more videos on there, but they're only for the backers or on the updates. So just to let people know, I'm actually going to be doing a couple more videos this week. So I like to kind of add in my updates something fun, entertaining, and kind of show what I'm up to. So I try to make it kind of a fun little community.
That's
so
good.
Yeah, so there's more than those. So just when people go to the page, go click on updates, and you'll see some more videos of stuff.
Okay. But the first one that's up top is this really cool trailer. So who is this awesome voice narrator that you have?
Oh, everyone loves him. His name is Mick Winger. And I know Mick Winger because when we were 14, we both broke our limbs riding skateboards. I broke my leg riding a skateboard. He broke his arm. And we both met at the library during PE in 7th grade. And so we became friends since then. So it's been over, you know, 25 years we've been, or 20 years we've been buddies. He is a professional voice actor. He now lives in Burbank. And he is now the voice of Kung Fu Panda, the Po character, the lead character in the Nickelodeon TV show.
Oh my god, that is just so amazing.
Yeah, so if you watch Kung Fu Panda, he does a great Jack Black, of course. And he's the voice of Kung Fu Panda, yeah. He's the real deal.
That's just incredible.
I love it. Yeah.
I mean, I was expecting, like, well, there was this hobo in front of the liquor store, and we got to talking one day, and I decided he had a really great voice.
Yeah. No, he's the real deal, and I wanted quality. Like, I wanted it to be cool and give it that kind of documentary, almost like a mockumentary in the beginning, of course, kind of this look to Pariah, and I wanted good stuff, so I had to have him. He's great.
So when you made this trailer and you did piece in this sort of like, it's not footage exactly, but you have the still shots of the old-timey photos and all that, why did you decide to do that instead of just showcasing the artwork of the comics?
You know, I don't know, Amber. I thought it would be cool. But see, I've heard some people say they'd rather see the art. And I guess I wanted to do it differently. And I thought, well, I don't want to just show pages of Jose's art all day. I personally, well, I love it. Maybe I'm too close to it. It's like, it's cool, but do we want to just see that for 5 minutes? Maybe we do. But I had the idea of why don't we just kind of make like a TV show, you know, make a trailer for something that feels real. And I wanted to also give it that, again, that kind of a documentary feel as though this was a real place. So I thought that would be interesting to kind of show real photos of the town, which the town is St. Joe, Missouri. St. Joseph, Missouri is a real place. It's just right up of Kansas City. So show places of St. Joe and kind of give people an idea like maybe this is real. And then towards the end, we go into more of the actual comic and stuff. I don't know. It was just kind of a weird creative choice, but I've heard mixed feelings, and some people think I shouldn't do that, and some people like it, and I don't know. You can't win them all. What do you think? Would you rather see the artwork?
I would say I would want to see a balance of both, because I actually I dug the old pictures a lot, you know, to sort of try and get inside your head, like, what is it that you were... what inspired you to make the story in the first place.
Right.
You know, which is why I'm having you on the show, because I want, you know, like, why did you find this so interesting? And you said that you find the research fascinating, and you like the Old West and the Civil War. And, so no, I mean, the thing I think with any of the trailers is trying to come up with the sweet spot of how long they should be.
Yeah.
You know,
and mine's long.
Yeah.
And it does not showcase my personality or any of that. It really is a trailer for a documentary series on the History Channel, you know. And so I needed to do that second video to showcase myself, and that's what I wanted to do, because I know that personality sells more than the product, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you buy the person, not the thing. So that's why I did the second video. But the first video is a little long. And to be honest, we only get maybe less than half of completed views. And, you know, I'm actually okay with that. Like, if they don't want to watch the last, you know, 30 seconds that talks about how I'm going to add more stretch goals, that's fine with me. That doesn't hurt my feelings. If they back it, I'm more excited, you know, about that. That's what I really care about. And I don't know if there's an equation of, these people watch the whole video, therefore they back more. I don't really know if that's a correlation. So, you know, it's, what is it, 4 minutes or 5 minutes, something like that? You know, if they listen to 3 minutes and they move on to the next video and learn about me, that's cool. I mean,
sure.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing, Amber. I'm just learning.
Sure, and, you know, so that's... It's okay. That's, you know, some people go to Kickstarter repeatedly because they've had successful projects, so they return for their, you know, their second issue or what have you. So this particular campaign, though, is intended to cover your entire 4 issues, correct?
Yeah, well, that if I get enough, if we go up in the goal amount, if we get up there, then I'll have enough money to make it all. And make the whole 4 issues. We'll trade it, have it all done by May or June. That is my goal. Now, the rewards to this Kickstarter will be issues 1 and 2 put together. We're just going to, you know, we'll perfect bind them together and give them out to everyone. And that's what the rewards are. If this becomes successful and people love it and this is a way to get the product out there, I would not be against doing this again later on next year. I'm still debating on how that... I mean, I have to see how this goes and see. Because, honestly, this is an emotional, you know, 30-odd days. And so the question is, do I want to put myself through it again, you know, in the next 6 months or 8 months or whatever? I'm not sure. I do know some creators who use this repeatedly in a year.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we don't even need to name them, but there are professional guys out there who... who do comics for Marvel and DC, who put out a Kickstarter, you know, 3 times a year.
Yeah, and maybe, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, and maybe they're hands off though. Maybe they don't even look at it or care. Or they got some guy to do all that for them, so they just slap their name on it. I don't know, but for me emotionally, I don't know if I could do it that much. That's just too much. And I don't want to use it as a store. I worry that to me, what I love about Kickstarter is, here I am, I got this weird creative idea. Will you guys help me make it? If you guys help me, I'll give you guys something. If you help me at this amount, I'll give you this. If you help me at that amount, I'll give you that. But I don't want to make it a store. I don't want to make it to where it's like, oh, come to my store where you can buy all my crud, you know, for this 30 days. To me, that's not Kickstarter. To me, that's something else. Do you know what I mean?
I believe Kickstarter like sort of made amendments to their agreement based on that, because they specifically were having that problem.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, with people having it as a store or something. So
yeah, because
they
didn't
make amendments.
Well, I mean, I know you want to make like a good value proposition for them and like get a good bang for your buck, but I also like. The whole idea is, like, you're not just buying the book for $15. You're helping me make this thing, right? And then I'm going to give you for free this for helping me make it. It's, you know, it's hard to kind of, like, put it in that perspective, because the customer or buyer wants something for his money. He's not just wanting to help you make your little passion project. But that's kind of the idea, I think, behind Kickstarter. At least that's what I take from it. I don't know.
Right. You know, sometimes I do find it strange when people that could very easily go to any of the publishing imprints that still allow you to have creator-owned.
Yeah! Jimmy Palmiotti could go to freaking whoever and say, here's my book, do it. And they would do it!
Yeah.
You know? Well, why do people have to use the same avenue that lowly little... Salazar has to use, you know?
yeah, exactly. Because he could go to Image.
And oh, hell yeah, he can. He knows all those guys.
Yeah. He's not the only one. There are guys that do it. There, you know, but he's very vocal about it.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know. But would I use Kickstarter again? Probably. Would I use it for Pariah? Probably. But I do have some reservations because... I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to see how this all comes out. If people love it and people are really stoked and they want this and they think that Kickstarter is a good forum to getting the book, then yeah, I'll do it, I suppose.
Okay. So let's talk about that. You know, the second video that you have there.
Okay, yeah,
you know, where you're introducing people to yourself and your life and. You know, why did you think that people need to know the creator and not the product?
Yeah, I looked at the videos that I liked the best. So I'm a performer. I like to, you know, make people laugh and have people listen to me. I'm a talkative guy, as you already know that now. So I watched a bunch of Kickstarter videos, right? Not just comics, but whatever. And I thought, well, the ones I really like are these kind. And there was something quirky about him. There was some personality. There's a little bit of comedy. They showed some character, you know, in them as creators. And I like that. And again, it's kind of that whole sales idea that people buy the person. And I knew that was lacking because I deliberately kind of took myself really out of the first video. You know, I mean, it mentions me a little bit, but and has a still of me or two, but you know, it's really not about me so much. So I thought, you know, I need something else, and I wanted to kind of show people what I'm up to, you know, and the idea I have for this whole time is that, you know, come to my site, back me up, spend $1, and you can see all my updates, and we can have fun together, and comment, and tell jokes, and just have a good time, and I'll kind of pull back the curtain and show you the process of how do I make this comic, right? So I'm going to be doing updates on how I do the coloring, how I do the lettering, all that kind of stuff, to kind of just show, because I kind of like the DVD extras, you know, I like those, I'm one of those nerds. So I'm kind of showing the DVD behind the scenes extras of A Day in the Life and what I have to do to make things happen. So that's kind of like the idea. Now, we shot it just like literally just one morning really quick. And then, of course, afterwards, I was like, oh, man, we should put a bounce in front of me to get better lighting, and we should have done this and that. But then I said, you know what, screw it. Let's just put it up, and I'm not going to worry about it. But, you know, there it is.
So here, when we get to take this, you know, this peek into your life, we, you know, we learn things that you're married, you have kids, you have another baby on the way.
Yeah.
So how does being a dad influence the sort of writing that you do? Do you, you know, because I imagine, like, Joe Hill is, you know, the son of Stephen King, right? And I imagine that must have been terrifying.
Right.
So, you know, how is it being a storyteller, like, at your house?
Well, I get a lot of my stand-up comedy. So a lot of the writing I'm doing now besides Pariah is, you know, my stand-up stuff. And I get a lot of my inspiration from, you know, what if, you know, my life, my family life. And, you know, you write about what you know, right, Amber? So
right.
You write about what you know, and I know what it's like to be a, you know, a father, also a divorced dad who's now remarried, and have a girl who's now a teenager, and who she doesn't think I'm funny anymore, and she doesn't think I was funny, and she doesn't want to hug me anymore. All these weird things. That girl, you know, my girl doesn't want to hug me. I mean, that just breaks my heart. But you know what? That's fine. I'm trying to give that up. So all those kind of things kind of influence the way I look at the world. You know, like, I don't see the same stories as interesting to me when I was 20 as I do now. Just because I'm just not as interested. You know, Sin City, Frank Miller, great graphic novel. Awesome. I loved it when I was 24, 25. If you were to give me Sin City right now and say, read this, I don't know if I'd read it again. I don't need to go back and read those stories. Not to say the creator's not great and that weren't great works of fiction, but it just doesn't grab me as much. You know what I mean? So the storytelling and the types of stories that influence me are changing because my world is changing. And you know, usually it's the same type of thing as anybody. You just got to spend time to sit down and write. And to get things on paper. I mean, the only way to be a writer or a creator is you got to do it. And that's the hardest part, is the inertia of just opening up the stupid program and start to type.
Absolutely. Do you ever have any battles with that? Do you have any problems?
Are you kidding? All the time. Especially now, with the Kickstarter going, I'm constantly emotionally, like drained and amped because of the Kickstarter, trying to find ways to get the word out that I will not right because I'm trying to, like, you know, market, you know, and promote and that kind of stuff. But it's a constant struggle, but I have the most fun when I write. I enjoy my time the most when I write. It takes me, you know, 10, 15 minutes to kind of get into it, but once I start tapping into it, I'm really having a good time. I like to write freehand, so what I'll do is I'll get a notepad and I'll just start writing because I can write faster than I can type, and the words and the dialogue go quicker than I can type, so I have to kind of catch up to my brain. So I write freehand really quickly, you know, especially dialogue when I have conversations going on with characters and I'm trying to slow them down and I can't do it. So I have to write quick, and I really enjoy that and kind of get into that mode.
Do you have to be like isolated and have it really quiet, or need like something playing in the background? Or?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I totally have rituals. Yeah, I love to have the TV going on for certain things. So for certain things I'm doing, I got to have the TV. When I'm writing a scene or a dialogue, I got to have quiet. I got to go somewhere and just write, and I can't have interruptions. But then when I'm doing a rewrite, or I'm retyping it, or I'm doing something like that, or just moving stuff around, working on outlines, things like that, I'll like have the TV going. I don't like a quiet home. I kind of like to have people around me, so I put the TV on and pretend that they're people, so I'm not lonely.
Oh yeah, I'm totally part of the Leverage team.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I do that all the time. But yeah, but when I'm actually, I do need to concentrate because my mind will wander. I do kind of have to shut things down when I'm actually going to write some dialogue or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, we were talking briefly. You mentioned your nerdiness about having your old comic collection and stuff, because that was in the trailer, and you got the library binding done.
Yeah,
which is always, you know, it's always beautiful. And what service do you use? Because the one that I knew about had gone out of business or something.
Yeah, we're using the Texas Library.
Oh, no, well, I think it used to be called librarybinding.com.
Yeah, I know.
And I didn't know they, like, went through some sort of, you know.
Yeah, well, they actually weren't doing comics, and I'm one of the first guys that started doing comics with them and brought them into it. I'm kind of an old-timer on the binding scene. And then they got a big boom of business, because I know a lot of people who started using them, and then I think they just went under.
Yeah.
I use a guy named David Banks. He's expensive, but his works are so much better than the library binding guys. They're just brilliant. You think like, they're just bindings. But when you look at them and you look the way the pages are cut and the way they open and stuff, it's a whole nother kettle of fish. Unfortunately, I just found out this week that he doesn't do it anymore. I don't know who my new guy is going to be. And I haven't bound anything in 2 years because I'm broke. Although I do have a stack of comics that are ready to be bound that I need to get done.
So anybody, if you're listening and you're into the comic book binding, please let us know.
Yeah, let me know who the new guy, the go-to guy is. But I don't know who I'm going to use now. But his name was David Banks, and he had, I think it was called DP Binding or something like that. He actually, maybe if I go to his site, he might have some sort of places to go now. But he's a good guy. Yeah, I love that stuff. People, when I was single, I was divorced and single for about 7 years, and girls would come over and they would see those books and they would just think, oh wow, he's like erudite and he must be, you know, is so intelligent. And it was just comics. It's hilarious because I'm like, no, they're actually just comic books. So.
But yeah, but they weren't just comic books. You had Sandman in there, which is freaking high literature.
Yeah, I'm the real deal. I had those Sandmans were bound long before those big old books were made.
Yeah, because now they do have the giant omnibus.
Yeah, and I was actually a little pissed about it because I was like, I spent a lot of money on all those freaking issues, plus. You kind of ruin them when you bind them in a way.
You do. You got to cut them up,
and then you got to spend the money to do that. So, binding a set of Sandman was freaking expensive, and to realize that then 3 years later they decided to just start making them like that, I was a little bummed. I was like, oh, dude. And then now it seems like that's the thing. Like, now it's all about collecting 24 issues or more in a big old book. So
right.
That's what a lot of the publishers are doing. But yeah, I'm highbrow. I got some good stuff in there.
Right,
I got blankets, you know, I'm cool.
I don't think I can bring myself to read Blankets.
Blankets is really... Do you like Craig Thompson at all? Do you like BB? Do you read Habibi?
No. I haven't read it. It sounds so depressing, and I am a depressed person. I don't need more.
Then don't read that. Yeah, don't read that. Read something happy like Fables or something.
Yeah, I've got a giant bookshelf of two reread.
Chris Ware is very depressed too. Don't read Chris Ware then.
Yeah, I did that one year.
he's kind of depressed. All these guys. Who's a happy creator that writes happy stories? I don't even know anyone. Gail Simone's probably happy, right? She seems like a chipper fella.
Yeah, I bet she's probably got some happy stuff. That's a good question. What have I read that's happy? Well, I read, last night I read Wicked West, which was a fun book. It was actually from, 2004, I believe, I read on the inside cover, which kind of surprised me. But that was a fun, quick read.
I'll check that out.
Extinct, I read last night, which is a really cool werewolf story. Kind of fun. It fits into that teen werewolf market.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know?
Team Edward or whatever. Jack.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like hunky shirtless guys and all, you know, anything like that, but really nicely drawn werewolves, too. I'm very critical if it's...
Are you critical about the hair? The hair's got to be just right?
Yeah, I mean, these were really well-drawn werewolves, so I was pleased with
that. That's good. Have you seen Howling? Have you seen The Howling?
God, what was that, 1982?
Yeah, it's like early 80s, 82 or 84.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You got to see Howling. That's the werewolf movie.
Howling and Underworld. I've actually really liked Underworld.
Underworld. That's Kate Beckinsale?
Yeah, Beckinsale.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. The Lycans versus the whatevers, right?
Yeah, the vampires. But I was really rooting for the werewolves in that.
Were you? The lichens are cooler?
Yeah.
The word lichen is kind of cool. That's a cool name.
It very much is. And, you know, because I'm not into the slasher stuff. So when you slap horror on something, I have to be very particular about it because things like vampires and werewolves are classically horror.
Yeah.
And yet they're not always scary, and in fact sometimes they can be hilarious, you know, we were talking about Angel and Buffy. You're a huge fan of The Walking Dead, and I'm not, and that's one of the things that I wrote to you about. I was like, you know, I'm the only person in my network of comic book nerds that doesn't like The Walking Dead.
Well, did you read any of it?
No.
Okay. Well,
no, because
That's probably good.
No, because my ex-husband was really into it, and he knows my taste well enough that he would tell me, you can't handle this book.
It is so depressing, especially trade 4 and 5, that it usually trade 5 is the breaking point. It's like if you either at that point you're like, I'm done with this book, or you're like, okay, screw it, we're going to do this. So, because it's just so dark at that section of the story, that even I was like, you know what, I just don't even know if I want to do it.
Yeah, but, that's what he would tell me, some of the things. He's like, well, here's why.
So grim. I mean, there's certain things in entertainment, and I don't mean to be prudish, but my old man comes out. It's like, there's certain things that I just don't really want to experience or to be exposed to. Do you know what I mean? There's just some darkness. It's like, you know what? It hurts too much. It's too real. It's too icky. And I don't get off on certain things, right?
Right. And you're a father, so that must affect you. That's why, like, when people... Yeah. I mean, part of the issues that, you know, as Twitter has gotten way more popular this year than last year... things come out like all the nonsense about the rape jokes and the rape comments and the in-game, you know, It never stopped. Like, I don't think I ever want to play a video game because it's, like, I was at least part of a happy community in gaming. I was part, part of City of Heroes, rest in peace.
Yeah, they just closed. City of Heroes, yeah.
They just closed last week, so. But these other games, they sound really horrible as far as the community of the players, and I have no interest in that. And, you know, there was on Twitter today, one of my friends apparently, in her comments, somebody, feels the need to say that if they disagree with a woman, then, like, their typical comment response is, she just needs to get laid. And she's like, oh, how come men don't go through this? And I said, well, they do, in fact. I said, there's a lot of virginity derogatory comments to men in the community. And, things like, you're just jerking off in your mom's basement. And, I said, the men go through it, too, but it's to a different extent. They're not always talking about rape, whereas that's what the women face. And it's been a very strange year for women. And in the comics community, Karen Berger just left, the DC world.
Yeah.
And 33 years at that company. It's time to retire. That's awesome for her. Nobody ever once mentioned Karen Berger during Women in Comics panels and discussions that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all of you people have just come out of the woodwork praising this woman who you literally gave no credit to.
Yep.
I know that you were a fan of Fables and stuff, and it was kind of like, everybody wondered if Vertigo would just be renamed, like Fables and Imprint.
Yeah, I mean, she worked with the big guys, I think she even worked with Alan Moore with Swamp Thing back in the day, She's done, I don't know what she's doing now. Do we know what her next career path is, or?
No, I don't, I haven't heard, no, but she, I mean,
I'm sure she's going to do something exciting, and she's definitely got the juice, so.
Yeah,
she can do it. Yeah, the rape thing and all that just really turns me off to the point where I'm just bewildered, literally, that those kind of comment that the concept of rape is kind of trivialized and talked about in such a way all the time. And if anybody has ever been or known somebody who's gone through anything like that, say anything similar to that, I think there would be more sensitivity towards it, because I would think most people have some sort of connection, right?
Well, statistically, you do. It's statistically alarming. Something like 1 in 4 women. So,
yeah, it's so
guaranteed
weird.
That if you are, if you think about the people in your life, you get up and go to your office every day, and you say, okay, well, there's 10 women in my office. Oh, my God, do the math.
Yeah.
And if you're the type of douchebag that's running around, making these, like, oh, you just need to get laid, or, oh, she, she's a lesbian just because a man hasn't given it to her properly. I mean, this is the sort of shit that's been blowing up, and it's, women have been going crazy, and, credit to the men who are standing up to it as well. We do have some really decent folks in the comics community. That call that shit out.
Yeah, and in Pariah, as far as my writing goes, one of the main characters is a character named Nelly, and she is a really strong character. She's going to be fun. I don't like the Megan Fox sex symbol vapid personalities. And I don't mean her as a person, but the character she plays.
Sure.
I like people who are strong, who have something to say, that have a point of view, and so I think that my stories hopefully will. I think women will like it too. That it's not just guys shooting guns. It's much
more.
Well,
tell me more about her, because I know that when I've talked to other writers of Westerns, they have. They have trouble sometimes working women into the story that are not, let's face it, the prostitutes.
Right. Oh yeah.
They're like, if you watch Western movies.
Oh yeah.
You're either the wife back on the farm, that, you know, you don't really see much in the movie, or something terrible happens, or she's sick and she dies, and so the man's left with the farm.
Yeah.
Or you are the prostitute at the brothel.
Right.
So how have you addressed, you know, this character? I mean, you can tell me right now, or you can, I don't know if it's a spoiler.
No, I'll tell you. So, and that is such a hard thing to do when you're working with period stuff, right? And you're trying to be authentic or at least somewhat true to the times. So it is a fact that in the times of 1857, a couple years before the Civil War, if you were a woman in one of these camp-like towns that are just springing up out of the ground, that you are going to be probably a some sort, like you say, a prostitute or a dancer of some sort. And that's what you are. That's what Deadwood's all a bunch of, you know, that's what all the women are. So I have to figure out a way to be a little different than that, but be true to the times. So I kind of think of it as the TV show A-Team.
Mm-hmm.
I love the A-Team, okay?
Absolutely.
And Nelly is Face Man.
Okay.
So the power I gave Nelly is not just the charming ability over the opposite sex, which, you know, which is a gift, but, you know, that's not really what we're going to promote. It's her connections within the community. So she's actually one of the few kind of founder people. She's been there since she was a child. Her father was an influential person there. And because she knows a lot of everyone's backstory and the secrets, she's kind of the information dealer. And I think that's going to give her a lot of power, or it does give her a lot of power, although not directly in the town. Everyone knows her, and she knows everyone. She's also going to be a fun character because I'm putting a lot of comedy or comedic moments and rivalry between her and Hiram Buchanan, who we would consider as the lead, you know, of the story. Their kind of tit for tat repertoire with them is going to be kind of fun to watch. And, you know, if you like shows like Moonlighting or even like The X-Files, where you have this kind of love-hate, you know, married couple type of dynamic, then that will be kind of fun. But it is a really hard thing to do, Amber, to say, I'm going to write a period story and make the woman a superhero, because that just wouldn't be period. You know, you're breaking that. Yeah, but that's basically the gist.
Okay. So before we wrap anything up, though, of course, let's get some really important information, like where people can find out about Pariah, Missouri, and where they can find out about you to follow along.
Okay. Yeah. So, Pariah, Missouri is pretty simple to find. I would say go to Kickstarter and just type in Pariah. That's P-A-R-I-A-H, and then Missouri. Just put Pariah and you'll find it there. Go there. I've got lots of fun things I'm making now. I have, we're going to have some shirts, bookmarks. I may do some buttons, posters, all kinds of stuff like that you can get. Also, with some new stretch goals I just added, before we talked about the audio play, but we're also going to be doing a coloring activity book, which I can't believe you didn't want to talk about.
Because
I think the coloring activity book is going to be awesome, because everyone has kids now, so they can print off their coloring book, and it'll be fun. I want to do something different, you know what I mean? I didn't want to do the same stuff, so I tried to be creative in it. We're going to be doing stuff like that. What else? I am a stand-up comic, so if you like comedy, go check out my podcasts. I actually have some podcasts myself. One is called The Biscuit Show, and it's on iTunes or on Podomatic. The Biscuit Show, or you can go to the website, biscuitshow.com. Also, I have a podcast just myself where I interview people about the creative process. So being creative and how to do that and how people kind of make it through is a very interesting topic of mine. And I interview some musicians, artists, writers, even a magician on the creative process. And that is called Andres Salazar's Nappy Headed Podcast. So if you go to the Nappy Headed Podcast on iTunes, you can find it there. I'm on Gmail. UndressedJSalazar@gmail.com. Go ahead and email me if you want some questions or whatever. And I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter and all that jazz.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you for your time and for filling us in.
Thank you very much, Amber. I've had a lot of fun. I like to meet new people, so it was cool meeting you and chatting with your listeners. I hope you guys all check out Pariah.
All right. So, everybody, again, Pariah, Missouri, over on Kickstarter. And, you know, make sure that they reach some of those awesome stretch goals. You can follow me at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter and, of course, at amberunmasked.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cheers.